And good morning. You're listening to Morning Edition on KASU. I'm Jonathan Reeves, News Director. Joining me right now is U.S. Representative Rick Crawford, who's, of course, representing the 1st Congressional District. Mr. Crawford, good morning. Thanks for joining us, as always, on KASU. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jonathan. Appreciate it.
One of the things I wanted to ask you about in the first half of this hour, they were talking about NPR had an interview talking about this $1.5 trillion infrastructure plan that's going to be released by the White House today. Just want to get your thoughts on the infrastructure plan, if you don't mind.
Well, I think this is, you know, kind of trying to accumulate, I guess what you might call a capital stack, obviously $200 billion direct spending from the federal government. So where does the rest of the money come from? I think that's somewhat unclear for most everybody involved at this point. The White House has they'll announce their plan, I believe, today on exactly where they expect the balance of that $200 billion to come from. But I think what you're going to see is obviously states, non-federal sources coming into play to some degree, and encouraging private investment, public-private partnerships, and so on. And then I don't think they've made this a case, but I think it could be. And that is, if you're taking the permitting process from 10 years down to 2 years, there's significant savings realized in being able to work more quickly over time. And so I don't know how they'll analyze that and how they'll weave that into the total $1.5 trillion 10-year projection, but certainly that's being considered. It would almost have to be. I mean, you think about how much further your money can go. It doesn't matter if those are federal dollars, non-federal dollars, private investment, whatever. They'll certainly do a lot more and a lot faster if they're not constrained by an unrealistic regulatory regime.
From what we're hearing, the $200 billion is going to be kind of seed money, I guess, a direct federal investment for the package. And I think some people are concerned about where that, as you say, where that money would come from in that regard. I think one of the concerns is that there's so much spending, which we're going to talk about here in a sec, but would you be for raising gas taxes or for something like that to kind of help pay for some of the spending that's going on when it comes to infrastructure?
Well, I think what we saw in Arkansas not long ago was a voter ordered tax increase on gas, and the reason they went along with that, and actually, in significant number, is because it was presented to the voters, and the voters made the decision, and it was clear that the tax was going to invest in our highways in the state of Arkansas. It wasn't going to create a new agency or to expand or hire new people or anything like that. So it wasn't an expansion of government. It was an investment in infrastructure improvements and upgrades. So from that standpoint, I think people, if you can make the convincing argument that, we're not doing this to grow government, we're doing it to improve, Arkansas has already demonstrated that. There are several other states that have done the same thing. But the fact is that our current gas tax is woefully inadequate with regard to its ability to yield any reasonable amount of infrastructure investment. Now, one problem is they siphon a lot of money off of it, no pun intended. The other thing is the gas tax is static. It wasn't indexed. When it was, last time we increased the gas tax, I believe it was 1993. And so there have been an awful lot of changes in those intervening years, most notably more fuel-efficient cars, and in some cases, hybrids and electric cars. Hybrids are driving on our highways at a deep discount, and electric cars aren't making any contribution to wear and tear on the highways. And so all of these things have to be considered to make a contribution if our highway trust fund is going to be adequately and appropriately funded. In terms of how we do that, I think there's a lot of discussion about that. Republicans don't like the idea of raising taxes, and so in some cases that the conversation never even gets started because of the mistake we made back in 1993, Congress, was that they didn't index it, so it couldn't grow accordingly. It couldn't yield and grow with the economy, and so therefore it's been stagnant and hasn't yielded the proper funding. That, along with the fact that it's not uncommon for highway funds to be redirected to other projects. And so a variety of things have to be addressed if we're going to create a viable highway trust fund.
With a $1.5 trillion infrastructure plan that would be released by the White House, how could, and you think about all the infrastructure needs across the nation, of all, you know, the bridges, the highways, and all of that, that's just a small part of that. But how could a plan like this be good for Arkansas by way of making sure that Arkansas gets the money that it needs for all of the infrastructure projects, especially in this district?
Well, a lot of folks don't know that, you know, I believe Arkansas has more paved roads, more miles of paved highways than the state of California. And so, I mean, it's not that we're anywhere bigger, anywhere close to as big, but we just have more paved miles. They have a lot of highways that are a lot of roads that are just not paved and you know, in actually some fairly affluent areas. Years and years and years ago, the state decided it would be a good idea to pave a lot of roads, pave farm roads, and that sounds good on the front end, but then, you know, it's like buying a horse. It's not necessarily the initial investment. It's the upkeep that's going to, you know, put pressure on you financially. So when you have to feed it, take it to the vet, put shoes on it, over time that starts to get into your pocket. Well, it's the same thing when you're paving a highway. The initial cost is not really the issue. It's the decades of operations and maintenance that really start to cost money. And the more paved roads you have, the more costly it is. And so we're a little bit behind the eight ball in that sense, that we just have a lot of paved roads in the state of Arkansas that have to be maintained. So it's a little more costly for us as opposed to a state like California or other states. That's one problem that we have. And so, I mean, those are things that we have to address and how we sort of prioritize. But I do like the idea of allowing some states a little more flexibility and creativity with regard to how we create revenue streams for highway funding in particular. I mean, broadly infrastructure, but in particular, highway funding, because that is a real challenge for us and how we can retain some of those federal funds. And there's a variety of ways we can do that. There's some authorities that exist now and some that probably should, that we'll address in the next highway bill and as we you know, try to hammer out policy for infrastructure investment.
U.S. Representative Rick Crawford joining us here on KASU. You know, President Trump has signed a two-year spending plan that will allow lawmakers to spend $300 billion more than the current law allows. And, of course, it suspends the hard caps on discretionary spending and sequester cuts. Some have been really critical for this kind of spending, and some are really concerned about there was some criticism over President Obama and what some called the trillion-dollar deficits, and now it seems like Republicans are kind of following along that way. How would you address those concerns about that we're just continuing the spending without actually addressing the deficits in the budget?
Well, I think what we're going to see, and this is a reckoning that we'll deal with, and it's going to come up soon, and we're going to be aggressive about this. In fact, one of the provisions of this budget bill was that we were going to have a balanced budget amendment brought to the floor sometime before March 23rd. We got that commitment from the Speaker of the House. And I've been one of those individuals that's been a very vocal supporter of fundamental spending controls with regard to a balanced budget amendment or a spending limitation amendment or whatever that sort of constrains Congress. There are some people that don't want to vote for a balanced budget amendment because they say that it might require a revenue increase. And for those folks, I came up with a spending limitation amendment that essentially caps federal spending as a percentage of GDP. So we would fundamentally define, you know, the size and the scope of government by placing that spending constraint that reflects our total economy. And I think it's hard to argue that, even for folks that we had a handful, believe it or not, there were four Republicans that voted against the last balanced budget amendment. I've been there now in my eighth year, and I've only had the opportunity to vote on a balanced budget amendment one time. And so these are some fundamental reforms that need to take place. And part of that is the conversation about entitlement reform, which I think is probably going to require constitutional amendment as well, because what we need to do, and I've got a bill that would do this and is gaining more support, and that is to require a two-thirds majority vote in both chambers to increase entitlement spending or to create new programs of entitlement spending. When we talk about entitlement spending, we're talking about the mandatory spending that really accounts for about 67% of our total federal budget that goes on without any kind of congressional authorities or appropriations. And in many cases, the agencies that are being funded have not even been reauthorized, some as long as 10 years. And so if you look at military spending, which, you know, breaking these the caps with regard to sequestration was largely geared toward being able to adequately fund our military to address the ongoing threat matrix that exists around the world and our inability really to address them as proactively as we should. So, but if you just talked about military spending, that's a fraction of the total discretionary budget and of our national budget. And so it's not military spending that's the problem. The problem is the mandatory side of the balance sheet that has to be addressed. And so step one, you know, some fundamental underpinnings that force Congress to spend responsibly. A balanced budget amendment would do that, and the alternative, a spending limitation amendment. And then finally, we don't need to go out and create new entitlement programs.
I think where there was some concern was that part of this was, I think, $80 billion this year and $80 billion next year for the Pentagon. And there was some concern saying the Pentagon has not been audited, or there's been a lack of audit. So there's been a real concern of government waste there. And then how would you address mm-hmm. that real quick?
Well, I'll tell you this, that I've been a strong proponent of auditing the Pentagon. None of these agencies are sacrosanct, and they should be audited. And I'll tell you this, Secretary Mattis is all in on the audit. This is a change. We've never seen the Secretary of Defense that says, yes, come audit us. But he recognizes that there's an opportunity to root out some fraud, waste, and abuse to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions, if we can do an appropriate audit and an ongoing audit and make sure that the money that they're appropriated, that it's going where it should go to do the most good. And so I applaud that effort on his part and on our part, because in Congress, this is something we've been working toward for a while.
Congressman Crawford, thank you for joining us as always. We sure appreciate it. We've run out of time. We'll be talking to you soon. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
That's Congressman Rick Crawford joining us. Now, you can hear the entire interview here in just a few minutes. We'll put it on the website at kasu.org. You can also subscribe to our podcast as well, as you can get those on demand anytime on your device. It's 8:33, and this is Morning Edition.